Few areas of social concern have generated the kind of charged atmosphere that hovers over the field of psychological problems. The dearth of solid knowledge and of indisputable treatments has formed a vacuum that has drawn in an assortment of competing ideologies, movements, and fads. The history of psychiatry shows that many ideas and concepts that once had attained the status of incontrovertible facts were later discarded as nothing more than myths or superstitions. We are forced to the realization that the study of the nature and treatment of the neuroses, or emotional disorders, does not rest on any proven theorems or generally shared assumptions. In the absence of any general consensus regarding the value of theories and therapies, there are no bounds to the extent of disagreement among the competing schools of thought. The mental health field is dominated by a few durable establishments and clusters of smaller sects of more tenuous standing. The major schools within this domain share certain characteristics: a conviction of the ultimate truth of their own system, disdain for opposing theories, and a steadfast emphasis on purity of doctrine and technique. In many instances, the popularity of a particular system seems to depend more on the charisma and single-mindedness of its originator than on the soundness of its foundations. When the authorities disagree among themselves regarding the correct approach to psychological problems, where does the troubled person turn for help? In view of the opposed and apparently irreconcilable views represented by the different schools, he faces a serious dilemma. He is trapped between choosing a therapist blindly and trusting to luck, or trying to cope with his psychological difficulties by himself. The solution to this dilemma may be found in an obvious yet substantially neglected area: the rich data available in the person's conscious ideas and in his common sense ways of defining and coping with his psychological problems. Classical psychoanalysis regards conscious thoughts as a disguised representation of unconscious conflicts that are presumably causing the problem. The patient's own explanations are regarded as spurious rationalizations, his coping mechanisms as defenses. Consequently, his conscious ideas, his reasoning and judgments, his practical solutions to problems are not taken at face value. They are treated as stepping stones to deeper, concealed components of the mind. The behavior therapists, similarly, have tended to downgrade the importance of thinking, but for completely different reasons. In their zeal to emulate the precision and theoretical elegance of the physical sciences, the original behaviorists rejected data and concepts derived from man's reflections on his conscious experiences. Only behavior that could be directly observed by an independent outsider was used in forming explanations. Hence, thoughts, feelings, and ideas, which by definition are accessible only to the person experiencing them, were not considered valid data. The patient's private world was not regarded as a useful area of inquiry. Watson, 1914, Skinner, 1971. Traditional neuropsychiatry, like psychoanalysis and behavior therapy, also minimizes the importance of conscious ideation. The neuropsychiatrist, sometimes referred to as an organicist, inquires about the patient's thoughts and feelings primarily as a basis for making a diagnosis. Abnormal ideation and feeling states are regarded simply as manifestations of an underlying physical process, or as possible clues to a disturbance in neurochemistry. They are not explored to provide explanations for abnormal psychological states.